great. Thanks for sticking around. So I'm Bryony Horgan from Purdue, and I'll be talking about soil crystallinity and perhaps its use as a climate indicator on both Earth and Mars. And I'll be talking about some field experiments we've been working on lately, some preliminary results from the Cascade Range in Oregon, looking at soil and glacial weathering there, and comparing it to Mars. So these two images you can see here, hopefully you can tell. So Earth, Mars, the rim of Gale Crater, actually. Okay, so as we've heard about amorphous phases a couple of times this morning already, both in Doug's talk and Deanne's talk, looking at, basically, there's this really interesting observation. Then we look at the rocks and sediments investigated by the Curiosity rover in Gale Crater. There's this really anomalous, very large X-ray amorphous component in those sediments. As we've seen already a couple times, here's an XRD pattern from Mars taken on the surface of Mars by the Kemen instrument. And here you can see there's this very large, what we call amorphous hump, in that XRD pattern, indicating a large fraction of XRD amorphous phases. And, you know, using a couple of different techniques to figure out just what percentage of the sample is amorphous, in particular, an interesting one that is not used very commonly on Earth, combining X-ray diffraction results indicating crystalline mineralogy with bulk elemental chemistry that gives you bulk chemistry, and basically looking at the mismatch between those two tells you about the chemistry of the amorphous component and how much is there. We can actually derive volumetric abundances for the amorphous components. And what's interesting is every single sample drilled by Curiosity today contains extremely high abundances of XRD amorphous materials, from 25% up through, almost 50% amorphous phases. So it's extremely high, it's anomalous, and we don't understand it. But this isn't an isolated observation. If we look at the observations from the Spirit rover and Gusev crater, here we're looking at a drill, I believe this is into Mazatzal. It's a rock that has a coating on it. You can actually see the coating in the drill hole right here, in the rat hole. The rocks in Gusev crater, they're different from the ones in, at Gale crater. They may or may not be lake sediments, we're not sure. But they have also indications of a very large amorphous component. And so here we're looking at thermal IR emission spectra, similar to what Deanne just talked about. So we're looking out in kind of the 7 to 20 micron range, looking at emission from the surface, taken on the surface of Mars by the Spirit rover. And so what we can see is these are all different measurements of the set of rocks in Gusev crater. And you'll notice that these absorption bands look fairly similar in a lot of ways to this laboratory spectrum of fresh basaltic glass. Now you might say, okay, great, they're made of glass. We don't think they are. If you look at the geochemistry, if you look at the Mossbauer patterns of these things, they look like they're extremely altered. So we do not think this is primary glass we're observing. Instead, we think this is probably some other sort of poorly crystalline amorphous component that is being modeled that looks like, and the molecular vibrations it has, it looks like basaltic glass, but it's an alteration product, most likely. And you can see that just compared to something like an opal, a more polymerized silica phase, it doesn't look anything like that. This has nice clear absorption bands. So it's sort of a very lowly polymerized, some kind of silicate phase. But if we model that, again, very high percentage of amorphous component, approaching 50% in many of these rocks. And again, as Deanne showed, this is not just localized to the rover sites. When we look at a thermal IR emission spectra of the Martian surface globally, we see a very large component attributed to these amorphous phases. So this is a general observation on Mars. These things are very important. How do they form? Why are they so widespread on Mars? Why is there so much poorly crystalline stuff on Mars? One thing, different possibilities, we're using pretty novel techniques to detect this stuff on Mars that are not typically applied anywhere on Earth. So is it perhaps just that poorly crystalline phases are somewhat underreported on Earth? They're not typically looked for in a lot of geological environments. That's one possibility. And so there's an open question, I think, of what environments do produce poorly crystalline phases on Earth. And so my group's been looking at that, and we'll talk about one field campaign relevant to that. But we're also looking at a few other things. What is the range of compositions of poorly crystalline phases? Deanne talked about these novel amorphous sulfates, but the composition of the stuff we're seeing on Mars, it's probably not allophane. It's probably not ferrihydrite, not the kind of standard poorly crystalline things we see on Earth. And also, how does that composition vary with environment? Is there a sort of predictable pattern? And then finally, something else we're looking into is what conditions preserve poorly crystalline phases in the geologic record. It's generally assumed these things are altered very quickly by burial diagenesis, and actually some new results out of my group that I won't talk about here is that they're not. In some situations, like paleosols, for example, you can preserve these things over million-year timescales. Okay, but let's talk about the one place on Earth relevant to this community that we do know poorly crystalline phases occur in high abundances, and that's in soils, right? So we know there's many different types of soils where poorly crystalline phases occur, and there's one sort of nice model that I really like to explain why they occur and the mechanism that causes them, and that was put forward by Ziegler et al. 2003, looking at monsoonal soils on the dry side of Hawaii. So soils created by very relatively low overall mean annual precipitation rates, but all that precipitation, a few hundred millimeters per year, comes in a few giant storms. And so basically it's this unique situation where you have very limited, instantaneous, very high weathering rates, right? But the rest of the year, nothing. But in those soils, you see very high percentages of amorphous products, mostly allophane in those cases. And so it's interesting, if you look at other places where we see lots of amorphous stuff in soils, it's things like soils with high mean annual precipitation, volcanic soils in wet climates, and then finally alpine soils dominated by snowmelt. The thing that links all these things together is that the weathering in these situations is, again, instantaneously very high weathering rates, right? Snowmelt causes an instantaneous very high weathering rate at the moment of melting. The rest of the year, perhaps not so much. Volcanic soils, the presence of glass, causes instantaneously very high weathering rates. High mean annual, this gives you lots of water, you can just generate high weathering rates, right? So all these things kind of fit nicely into this model put forward by Ziegler et al. 2003. And one of my favorite examples of this is just, random mountain, but put forward by a few different studies looking at clino sequences going up the side of a mountain and looking at soil mineralogy as a function of climate. Below the snow line, soils, even if this is a nice volcanic glass-rich soil, will tend to be dominated by well-crystalline smectites. Above the snow line, we'll tend to see a lot more allophane and other poorly crystalline stuff in those soils. So it's telling you something about the fact that you have snow melt, and that rapid leaching creating these amorphous phases. So this sort of puts forward the idea that there's an interesting correlation here between this rapid leaching, in particular in association with melt processes, that can generate these amorphous phases. So certainly these are all possible ways to generate those poorly crystalline things we see on Mars. But what about other environments? And so we've started looking into sort of an analogous environment, actually glacial weathering. So and we want to know, does glacial weathering analogous to snow melt produce these poorly crystalline phases? We've been conducting this new field study. This is the Three Sisters in the Cascade Range in Oregon. It's three different glaciers on it. It's unique because it's highly mafic. It has a lot of basalt and basaltic andesite, so it's very Mars-like. And we're looking into what is the mineralogy of glacial weathering. Does it produce lots of these poorly crystalline phases? Based on the Ziegler et al. Model, we would predict it does, because it's, again, a melt-dominated environment with very rapid weathering. And so just to give you some taste of what we're seeing so far, here's an X-ray diffraction pattern of some of the glacial flour from some of the different glaciers in this range. And so here you can see this is just a bulk XRD pattern of glacial flour. Lots of nice crystalline primary volcanic rocks, but also this sort of small peak here is a hump due to amorphous material. If we sieve down to the sub-2 micron size fraction, we get an even larger amorphous hump. So it's telling us that glacial flour in and of itself is actually composed of ground-up, very crystalline volcanic, primary rocks, along with an amorphous component that we're attributing to weathering. And if we look at the thermal infrared spectra, again trying to tie this to Mars, of glacial flour, here's what we see, right? So here, these should look pretty familiar because they actually look a whole lot like the thermal infrared spectra we saw from Gusev Crater, of that stuff that looks a whole lot like basaltic glass, but we don't think it is here. We don't see any other evidence for significant basaltic glass within the glacial flour. So again, we think this is due to a weathering component, a secondary amorphous phase generated by weathering in this melt-rich environment. So for the geochemists in the room, just what's going on here? So one interesting thing we found in the system is that most glacial systems are dominated by carbonate and carbonate dissolution. In this system, it appears to be driven entirely by silica. Silica is the dominant thing we find in the water. We find silica coatings. We find silica just everywhere in the system. We think that maybe, and there's previous literature to support this, we think that's due to the mafic nature of this system. And so that's unique. Okay, so this creates a new hypothesis, right? Our new hypothesis is that poorly crystalline silicates on Mars may indicate past cold climate weathering, either in soils or subglacial environments, glacial environments, kind of that scenario. And if we go through all the different, other hypotheses we put forward here for where we know poorly crystalline phases occur, we can think about, okay, sure, you get them in soils with high mean annual precipitation and sort of volcanic soils and wet climates, But we don't see the more crystalline phases that you usually get as that weathering process continues. We don't see kaolinite, for example, in these sediments. We also don't really see the geochemistry to suggest there has been extensive leaching in these environments either. The geochemistry also suggests, you know, basically isochemical weathering. So that really leaves, that kind of removes all of these situations up here, and instead it kind of leaves us with a lot of these cold climate weathering scenarios. In particular, glacial flowering sediments, I think, could potentially be a good fit for the material we're seeing, so it definitely indicating cold climate weathering. But, you know, so let's think about that. So this is saying cold climate weathering, maybe there's indication of that in these places on Mars. Could it be used to support the idea that Mars was always cold and icy? And that's one of the hypotheses being debated in the Mars community right now, that Mars was never really warm and wet, that it was always cold and icy. But I think there are observations on Mars that don't support that, that are, in fact, saying that there perhaps was extensive weathering due to warmer conditions. And in particular, there are these interesting observations. You can see here, looking down an outcrop, here's a 400-meter scale bar of this outcrop where we can see spectroscopically from orbit aluminum-rich kaolinite phases overlying iron-magnesium-rich smectite phases, basically a leaching profile like you would get here on Earth. Okay, and we see this same kind of situation. This is sort of a, usually sort of 5 to 10 meters thick, so a fairly deep leaching profile, all over Mars, right? All these little dots here are all over the Martian surface. It's all the same observation. And they're all dated within this fairly significant specific range, so within sort of 3.7 to 3.8 billion years ago. So this has been interpreted as suggesting sustained rainfall, not necessarily a very wet climate, but at least a fairly warm climate, or a semi-arid climate at the very least, where you had rainfall falling on the surface, leaching, and creating a leaching profile. Okay, so if we integrate all that together, you know, the fact that we're one interpretation of the poorly crystalline phases we're seeing, and I think Doug's talk this morning agrees with that, is that they could indicate this cold and icy climate on ancient Mars. But if we look at the places we've actually measured it and put it in context on the Martian timescale, they tend to fall, most of the landing sites we think are probably Hesperian in age, sort of this middle era of Mars geology. And you can compare that to the Earth timescale down here, so sort of early Archean. But they all tend to fall kind of in this range, and so we think this is at least indicating that on sort of the middle-aged, young-ish Mars, that this is indicating perhaps a cold and icy climate. But these leaching profiles I just discussed with these nice crystalline clay phases tend to be isolated into the Noachian, this sort of early, early period of Mars history. So I don't think we can, so I think in general we can support the idea, which is supported by many other observations, that Mars was initially perhaps somewhat wetter, got colder and drier over time. I think the mineralogy is generally supporting that. But really to test that, we need to land in a Noachian environment. We don't know that we've actually done that on Mars yet. We need to go to an environment like this, hopefully find a soil, look at the mineralogy, look at the geochemistry, and see what it tells us about the climate. So anyway, thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Any quick question? We're running a few minutes late behind the schedule. So but you can ask questions during the break too, right?
Yeah, and I'm also, I would love to collaborate with some terrestrial soil scientists, so please come talk to me.
Thank you.